Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. On today's episode, I am very happy to be talking to a man who has worked his way up to the lofty heights of art editor at what I can only describe myself as the holy grail of a football publication, and that is Anth Moore, art editor at 442.
Nice to meet you finally, Mark, out there.
Hey, it's good to speak to you today, Anth. Can you let people know how you are and where you are in the world?
I am currently beaming live from my kids' playroom, essentially, which is doubling up as my office since the old COVID lockdown, out in the leafy suburbs of Surrey. We are out at, I live in East Molesey now, which is just down the road from Hampton Court Palace, which is very civilised.
Okay, and that's a different part of the world to where you're from yourself, is that right?
How have you worked that out?
just the sound of your voice, I think, gives it away.
Yeah, the accent, it's not getting any thinner, is it, all years? I think I've been down in London for a long while now, and it doesn't seem to be thinning out.
Also, your Twitter header image gives it away. Not the photo with you next to Pelé, but something behind that.
Yeah, I've been debating whether or not I should be being a bit more PC there and removing that image and moving on. But yeah, it was too good to not use. Weirdly, I had somebody in that that was in the crowd shot there get in contact with me and say, that's me in the background. Can you send me a picture? I was like, maybe not.
Oh, wow. Small world. Yeah. So how is life as a Newcastle United fan right now? Is it a positive season, you think?
It's the cliched roller coaster that we go on every season. I mean, takeover aside, you know, we did some good business in the transfer window, so I was quite buoyed by that. First game against West Ham, I was like, I won 60 quid. Winner, I never win on the bet. Got the score, got the first score and score, so that was quite happy. So, I was very, very optimistic. And then, normal service has resumed. But, it's a weird time for Newcastle at the minute. It still feels like there's things rumbling on in the background, but I really don't know. I took a back seat on Newcastle once Rafa Benitez went.
That was really? The
kind of straw that broke my back.
Yeah.
So, I've kind of been watching from afar, but then you can't not get excited when you see a takeover and you might finally get your club back. But, as the old saying goes, it's the hope that kills you.
It is, that's true. And when you were living in the area yourself, did you go to St James's Park often? Did you go to games much?
Yeah. Well, I was you don't get a choice when you're born in Newcastle. You can see the ground out of our back window, out my sister's bedroom window, or what was my sister's bedroom window at home. So, black and white daft. Dad the same season ticket his whole life. I always had a season ticket. And then when I went to university, I tried to go to Northumbria and various other, in the locale, so I could keep my season ticket, and ended up going to Teesside, weirdly. And then I ended up having to get rid of my season ticket in the first year, which was pretty annoying. But I gave that to my uncle in the pretense that, when I'd finished university and I'd be back, I'd be able to buy a battle from. But by the time I'd finished university, I didn't have the heart to take a battle from because he'd got the bug entirely. So, I've always been going Gallagher regular, the corner. That was my spot.
There were two Newcastle players that I always have a soft spot for. And it'll be interesting to hear from a Newcastle fan what your thoughts of them are. Alessandro Pistone and Hugo Viana. I don't think either of them are at Newcastle for that long, but I really, they're two players that I really have vivid memories of playing for the club and particular times of the club's era as well.
Yeah, I mean, Pastore was, I don't know, the two things that spring to mind instantly for me are Pastore, housewife's favourite.
Okay, everybody, right, yeah.
Very pretty boy. He's a great player, by the way. But yeah, that always sticks in my mind. And I don't know how we are swearing on this podcast.
Well, if you can keep it relatively, 8-15 rated, that would be great.
Well, Hugo Viana, that was just the nickname that stuck with him. It was, you might have to bleep it out, Morris, but I'm going to say it's huge.
Oh, okay.
Was,
I got you.
Was how was the one of the names that stuck, which I did actually see on the back of a shirt at the time. But yeah, both good. But both are players. I mean, Pastore was obviously a great player. But yeah. Hugo Viana, he was pretty good, man. He was another good-looking chap as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he was at Newcastle when he was really young. Not there for too often, I remember. And one of those players that only a few years ago you're reminded that they're still playing because they played that young when you remember them back in the Premier League, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a few of them. I mean, we obviously, in my line of work, gone through archives and stuff, and you're just like, crikey Moses, like, who was playing? Yeah. It only dawned on me the other day that Michael O'Neill, is it Michael O'Neill? Martin O'Neill, or the Ireland manager. But he was he used to play for Newcastle, and I loved him. And I remember going to see him with my dad.
Really skinny Michael Irish. O'Neill, yeah.
Yeah, he's really skinny Irish lad, and I can remember loving watching and being like, he was fantastic. And it literally only dawned on me until recently. I was doing picture research, and he cropped up, and I was like, you're joking me. I was like, I contacted my cousin who I used to go with, and I was like, he was just like, yeah, of course it is. And I was like, yeah, mate, I'm getting old.
Well, can you let people know what an art editor is and what it is you do at 442?
So it's basically I'm responsible for kind of all of the visual output for 442. So essentially, like, day to day, it's the magazine. So that's kind of commissioning all photography, picture research, illustrations, photography briefs, and the actual nuts and bolts of how the magazine looks. And then as time's gone on, and you get all the social media channels, things like that, so any stuff that goes out on social media and stuff, I mean, I'm spread quite thin at the minute, so it's trying to do as much of that as humanly possible. But generally, the day-to-day, it's the day-to-day running of the magazine, really making sure we get, it looks as good as it can look, and we're getting the right pictures and commissioning our own photography and artwork and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's kind of overall and just the overall look and feel of 442 as a brand as a whole, really.
Okay. And what was your background and how did that get you to where you are now as an art editor? Is it a role that someone goes into quite specifically early on? Or have you more just moved there?
I'll try and keep it brief. I'll do the bridge version because it is quite a funny story. But I can remember we were at school, and it started off at work experience, really.
Okay.
We did work experience, and it was kind of, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, what are you interested in? All that kind of stuff. It was like the choices were to go and work at the airport collecting trolleys, or go and work at like Dixon Sports Shop or something in town. And I just was into art. I quite liked doing art at school. And one of the options that came up was to go and work for the local paper, the Evening Chronicle. So I was like, yeah, I'm into that. So yeah, I went, and within about 2 minutes of being in the door, I was like, yes, I'm into this. This is what I'm into. Because I was on the art desk basically working with one of the local cartoonists there who did loads of Newcastle United stuff in the Pink, which was like an afternoon paper that used to come out after the game.
Yeah.
It was just, it was a breath of fresh air seeing people that enjoyed what they were doing. It just seemed like good fun. And, I'm from a Newcastle background, working class background. My dad kind of, didn't particularly like his job, hated it. He'd come in from work exhausted and lay on the sofa and go to sleep in front of the TV and stuff. And I can just remember thinking, if you're going to do a job and do something, it may as well be something you enjoy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that kind of planted the seed for me. And then after that, I just kind of thought, yeah, I'm going to pursue this. So finished school, did a BTEC in graphic design, which was good, really eye-opener, kind of, you know, coming away from school. I didn't particularly enjoy school. So getting to college, I learned more in that time of college, I think, than I did in all school. I just kind of was really focused in that sense. And then finished there, went to university at Teesside, did a degree in Teesside. And finished that, and then I was asked to go to my work was going to be taken down to this thing called New Designers Exhibition, which happens every year in London. So all the universities kind of collate their work on it, and they bring a sample down, and prospective employers come and have a mooch around, see if there's anybody that they like. So my work came down here, and I couldn't actually afford to come down to London, so my work came down. But I was out playing football with one of my mates in the school field, and my dad came driving up, and I was like, Jesus Christ, what's happening? He's like, get yourself home. The phone's ringing. There's people want to talk to you. They want to interview you for jobs in London. And so I was like, oh, what the heck?
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I took off back home. I had a few people call me up. So I had about five or six people wanted me to come to London for interviews. So I was like, great. I had no intention of going to London, if I'm brutally honest. But I was like, yeah, you know, just graduated. Let's go for it. So I blagged a train fare off every single one of them.
Yeah.
didn't tell each one I was coming down. So I got train fares from everybody, and I stayed on a friend of mine's couch. There was a lad I was in the class with at university. And I just had interviews all over. And weirdly, one of those was Haymarket Publishing, who did 442. And I walked in the door, and there was the big 442 behind the counter.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh, that was my, you know, that was the mag I devoured. I loved that. I was just like, wow. I was like, I'm doing this. Like, I've got to get this. It wasn't 4442, the job. It was to actually work on Autocar, one of the, still going now, one of the weekly car titles. Yes. So, yeah, I had the interview with them. I was just like, oh, I've got to get that job. And then they offered me the job. So I ended up there, yeah. And I worked at Haymarket Publishing for a while. I worked on Autocar. So I worked across a lot of their titles. I worked next door to 442 at the time, but I always had kind of eyes on, that was what I wanted to work there at some point in the future. So I piled up with a few of the guys there and played football with them. And so that was enough for me at the time. I was like, oh man, this is amazing. You know, like this is the mag that I grew up, fell in love with, and I'm now playing football with them. So that was amazing. But yeah, anyway, I started working my way around the company. So I worked on Autocar and then various other titles. And then left there, went to work at an agency in London, doing music stuff and Formula One and stuff like that, doing magazines and artwork for them. And then Haymarket got back in contact with me and asked me if I wanted to come back to redesign one of the technology titles, Stuff Magazine, which is all like gadgets and all that sort of gear. So went back, redesigned that, worked on there. And then I was just always thinking, I've got to get back to 442. And I knew all the lads that worked on there because we shared an office, and I just kind of always kept in contact with them all.
Yeah.
And, just managed to worm my way into the then art director's ear, going, you're not bored on 442, you've been there a while. Do you not fancy a switch? And we'd file to have a word with the art director and see if we can't get a switch, and you can come and work with all the ladies in bikinis holding iPods, and I'll come over here. And it took a little bit of work, but I managed to persuade him in the end. And yeah, that was it. And from then on, I've kind of landed the job, and I've been there ever since, really. I didn't think I'd be there as long as I have been, but it's kind of, like I was saying to you just before we came on the podcast, kind of a busman's holiday, you know. I feel very lucky to work doing something I love and in a subject matter I love.
Okay. I'd imagine the 4-4-2 five-a-side team, I'd imagine the standard of the team would be pretty high. Is that a fair assumption? Is that right?
Oh, it varies. It varies over the years. It's been good, over the years it's been terrible. Depends who you ask. I mean, we used to have, because we used to be based in Teddington, in the actual Teddington studios.
Okay.
We used to film all the TV and stuff. And there was a pitch across the road from there, a hockey pitch. So we used to have a game in there every Thursday called The Cage.
Yes.
And so we'd all go, and it was like, it got serious. It was amazing. But we'd have, so within Haymarket, we had lots of other brands. We have like the guys that do the FA programs as well. And we had guys doing Sky Sports. We did the Olympics. We did, so over the company, it's quite a big company, but we put the round robin email in, and every week there'd be a good seven-a-side game. was pretty good standard, to be fair, and we got really good, and we were writing match reports, the guys, there was end of year awards called the Golden Shin Pads.
Yes.
Yeah, it was really good. So we've always kind of tried to have a game going. That was Thursday lunchtimes, and then we moved to a new building in Twickenham. We found another pitch close by. So there's always kind of been a game going on, but since we've moved up to Paddington, and obviously since the lockdown and stuff, it's just got less and less. So this isn't really a regular game as such going on now. But the team was really good. We've had some great players. Really, really good players. I mean, put me to shame.
But oh, yeah, really?
We've had some real good players. One of the lads, I don't want to mention their names because they'll get too big-headed.
Okay.
But Andy, there's a lad called Andy Murray. Not the Andy Murray, and that's amazing. Yeah. Every day his phone used to ring, and every day he'd have to go, yeah, like the tennis player.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, yeah, he played at quite a high standard in Spain. There's another guy called Hunter Godson, who now works for one of the other brands. He's a decent centre-back. Yeah, some great players. Good laugh. Those two they stand out to me, annoyingly.
Yeah. And is there a 4-4-2 kit? Like, is there a 4-4-2 kit that the team wears?
Nah, we were so rubbish. We worked, you know, in football with football people, and for years we didn't even own bibs. It was
really wow.
Oh, it was pathetic. Yeah, but one of the lads, Chris at Umbro, who now works over on Under Armour, I think he set us up with a load of full on red and white 442 branded shirts with the embroidered logos and everything.
Yeah.
Which we've used in a couple of kind of games against other titles or whatever. They all got leached and disappeared as people moved on and left. So there's a couple of those floating around. But yeah, we've never actually had a full on kit, because if I had my way, it wouldn't be a red and white kit, let's put it that way.
Would it not?
No, I've got an aversion to red and white, as you can probably imagine.
So if we can consider a typical issue of 4-4-2, could you talk us through what an art editor's role on a typical issue would be and what you would normally have to be planning for and working on with any one given issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot really in recent years, and obviously we've moved publishers and kind of paid down as well just because of the COVID and stuff like that. But general day-to-day is kind of like, and so the guys, I mean, obviously we had a lot of stuff planned in, like up to 6 months in advance for the Euros, and you know, you've got certain benchmarks of the year, like season previews that we hit and we know when they're going to happen. So that was obviously interesting. You know, you like have a 6 month calendar of things that are, you know, there's not necessarily a lot of stuff in, but there's, you're always spinning plates and there's things going on. The guys, the editors like James and people like that are all going out, taking meetings and kind of having things planned in. But, you know, kind of just everything was ripped up. So, you know, and that includes things like planning for paper and print and all that side of things, which is, you know, it's a bit of a nightmare really. But you just have to react to it really. And so we'll cut, you know, if the guys have got kind of, quite a lot of contacts. There's obviously people who want to promote various different things as well. And it's just about the editor and the editorial staff and teams and the writers and stuff getting a good balance of what's interesting and what's coming over the horizon. So they're obviously keeping an eye on the landscape, you know, on the editor's job as well. We've had to work with some great editors who've, you know, had an uncanny way of predicting the future in terms of football and who's going to go away and who's going to do what and kind of things landing at the right time. So sometimes it's blind luck. Sometimes there's a lot of planning goes into it. And for other things like England and bigger promoted things, we have to have those planned in a lot further in advance, because we then have to deal with, you know, the planets aligning in terms of players being in certain places at a certain time and access and when the kits are launched and all of that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of looking at calendars and stuff. But for me, it's more about just, keeping abreast of all of that, but keeping plates spinning and just making sure people, photographers, are in the right places at the right time, and they've got briefs and we know what we're going to do and what we're going to shoot. And just having stuff in hand so that you're always working, you never kind of have this spot where you're sitting on your hands for like a week waiting for things to come in. I mean, that's the dream scenario. There is inevitably working in the football world, you know, you're waiting on players to turn up for photo shoots, or sometimes today they don't turn up, sometimes they turn up very late, sometimes they don't turn up at all.
So you've
got to, you know, roll with the punches and just kind of try and get all that to fit into your window and your schedules, and just balance the books accordingly. You know, if some things are going to be in early, I work on them. Some things come in very late, then it's just, yeah, you just have to pull some. Sometimes you have to pull some late nights, but yeah, it's a bit of a play. It's been an exercise, really.
If there was to be one player or manager who would be a dream you think to work with for a particular photo shoot, so you got to art direct the whole shoot, it's for a cover and you get to do whatever you wish, and it's for a player, it's working with a player who could be absolutely whoever you wish it to be, who would be the choice?
Oh yeah, the $1 million question. It's really difficult to answer that because it varies. There are some people that you want to photograph, who you're itching to photograph, and they could have just had, and you know, within 2 minutes of walking in the room, whether you're going to have a good photograph or bad, you know, if it's going to go well, really? If it's going to go bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, so I'm just trying to think of examples. I don't want to get us into trouble or slagging anyone off, but, well, for instance, this won't get me into trouble because it is just a fact, and people now could probably back me up because it is quite funny. Neymar, for instance, Neymar and I had a good shout match at each other.
Because
he turned up 7 hours late for a photo shoot in the Camp Nou. So we turned up and he had a whole raft of appointments to do for Nike as part of a boot launch, whatever.
Okay.
We were piggybacking on that. Yeah, it was about like 7 hours late, and then kind of sullenly got in front of the camera after being coaxed out of his house. And obviously was just kind of didn't want to be there. And we'd been there for 8 hours waiting, and I kind of was at the end of my tether and was asking him to smile or open his eyes or something, and he just turned around and barked something at me. And at that point, I was like, okay, I'll leave the photographer to work his magic here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think previously I would have said Neymar, you know, because he likes having his photograph taken, but, you know, on that day he didn't. But I've heard subsequently, nice as pie, we have done other stuff with him since. Brilliant, okay. Loved it. I think sometimes it just depends. You catch people on bad days, sometimes you catch them on good days and you get lucky, kind of thing. It's one of the things we've strived to do on 442 is it's like working with good photography talent, but it's we don't go in for the kind of heroic puffed out chest,
yes,
you know, arms folded shots that you kind of see in the store at Nike Town, or, you know, the point of sale material, which is kind of has been, you know, like when I started, that was kind of the way that always was with these big brands and stuff. We kind of want to capture, you know, a bit more fun, a bit of laughter, like kind of, and inevitably, like the running joke when we talk to photographers and stuff, it's normally the test shots in the first 3 or 4 clicks before when you're doing a light test or something, the shots that normally make the cut. As soon as you tell someone, these guys to pause, or, you know, like right when now we're going to start, everyone stiffens up. And so it's kind of, that's been one of the things I've tried to bring, and I think it's worked. You know, nowadays, you know, it's kind of commonplace that these big clubs do that now. You know, it's very rare that you see the straight head and shoulders that you used to get, like, for club promo shots with people like City and Thingy. It's all a bit more animated and fun and laughter, and which is kind of what we want to try and bring, which I think we have really over the years. But yeah, so I'm waffling. To come back to your question, it's hard to say. In all of the time we've been, if I've been at 442, I haven't done a Newcastle United photo shoot. Can you believe that?
Oh, really? Wow.
And it's hard. Well, it's easy to believe because the team's been so bad. Every time we've had a Newcastle United photo shoot, I've either been on holiday or been unable to attend. So to this day, I have yet to do one, and I'm furious about it.
Well, looking back at the covers that you've worked on in your time at 442, are there any photo shoot covers that really stand out to you as being hero examples of that worked really well?
So I think off the top of my head, we've done so many now over the years, they all tend to start blending into one another. I mean, we've done various ones for different reasons. I think we did the Galacticos one where we revisited an old cover So Got the Guys kind of Nowadays was a really good one. That kind of ran over six to 8 months in planning in terms of getting everybody in around. And that was and that was shot, you know, all over the world kind of thing. And the guys, you know, are buying like the correct shirts for the time off eBay and having photographers take them around with them and stuff like that. So that one, in terms of the time it took and the execution and everything, it was kind of a mirror image of a previous cover that we'd done like, you know, however many years prior. That was, I thought that worked really well. And that was shot by Shamal Tanner, who's one of our kind of go-to snappers for the covers and stuff. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah, I love Sham. He's a legend. And he's a very happy man at the minute because he's a Liverpool fan. So.
Oh, is he? Oh, he's a very, very happy man then.
He's over the moon. But I think with that covers off the top of my head.
There are actually a couple of illustrated covers that I have seen you've heroed on your own site. They are, there is one, a super gaffer cover by Stan Chow.
It was a season preview.
And there's a Matt Herring, there's a Matt Herring Season of Salvation cover.
Season of Salvation.
Yes, yes.
That could be one of my all-time favourites, that one.
Really? Can you talk us through those two as briefs?
Yeah, it's funny you picked those out, actually, because they are both, like, the season previews always afford us the luxury of doing kind of a more postered cover.
Okay.
So we can go to town because they're... Obviously, designing front covers is like, there's a science to it and all the rest of it, which I won't bore you with, but, you know, we can't go down the American market of producing lovely posters, magazine covers with zero cover lines on because, you know, we've got to work on the shelf on the newsstand, so we have to put news. So it's finding that nice sweet spot of balance of, you know, hit marks, having things in certain areas. So, you know, like for instance, top left hand corners of magazines, you'll invariably find that there's a number hit in there. It's through research and stuff like that, it's been proven that, you know, number hits go down well. And so there's all these little marks that we try to hit and to maximise sales, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're always there for making money. But yeah, the season previews, because they're normally bagged and they come with an extra issue. So we've always done these foil bags. This year's the first year we haven't, actually, obviously due to COVID, we've kind of had to scale all that back. But because it's bagged, we don't have to put any cover lines on it. We have to do all the artwork on the bag, the outside, the cell. So whatever goes inside, you can do whatever you want. So it's kind of a free hit in terms of producing an amazing piece of art. So yeah, I think Season of Salvation one, that was the first one. That was one of the first ones we did. I mean, I'd worked with Matt before, Matt Herring, who's fantastic, like digital illustrator. We touch our guy, he's amazing. I can't remember what he did previously for us. Anyway, I floated this idea to him, and I went off with I was literally up against the windows, actually drawing, tracing like images.
Oh, really?
Like, just doing a real, real pencil sketch of it. And I was like, this is exactly how I'd say it. Like, it's got to be like this. And normally I'm not one for fastidiously planning something into to like finite details. I think when I work with illustrators and stuff like that, I kind of give them an idea of what I think it should look like. But I kind of have the opinion, you know, you're employing these guys to do their job. Like, I want them to bring something to the party. I don't want someone to just reproduce what's in my head. But this was kind of one of those places where I was like, it's got to be like this. We've got it. So I traced it all off and left it to Matt. He's like, yeah, okay, that makes perfect sense. And then it came back and it was just like, yeah, straight away we're like, oh yeah, we're onto something here. So then once he finally artworked and stuff, we were going through, and I don't know if you noticed anybody, but at the very, very bottom, there's a little devil's head, and the little devil head is Steph Latter.
Yes.
Like, those tiny little details like that were like, they were at the 11th hour going, oh Matt, could we do this? This will be great. Like, so yeah, that was a real success. That picked up loads of traction online. That was, you know, it was really, really good. Really happy with the final product on that.
Yeah.
And I think on the other one was was that the Year of the Gaffer or the something like that, or the Stan Chow one?
The Season of the Super Gaffer.
That's right, Super Gaffer. So that like, we've worked with Stan for Stanley's like subsequently turned into a good mate, actually, who I have a few pints with every now and again in Manchester or when he's down here. So yeah, that was great. So there's a funny story with that, actually. Now, we did all the illustrations. So it's always a bit of a nightmare, the season previews, because, you know, the minute they're printed, they're all news. And when it gets to that, you know, that window, yeah, you just sort of sign-ins as managers can go and come and go and all the rest of it. So we were kind of like, we've got to leave this till like the 11th hour. So Stan was away and running, you know, doing his thing, brilliant. So he's sending me these in as he's finishing them. Brilliant, that's done. Next one, next one, next one. He went on and on. And weirdly, he sent me an email just out of the blue, just going, I'm going to smash my Mac up in a minute if I don't get this right. He's like, I cannot get Steve Bruce right.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like, his face is like, because if you look at Stan's, a lot of Stan's stuff, it's very symmetrical. I mean, it's changed a bit more now, but at the time it was like, and he just couldn't get it because of Bruce's face. Anyway, he did it and it's absolutely fantastic, but it nearly killed him. So we finished the cover at the 11th hour, got it printed. And I think within a few hours of it printing, there was like two or three managerial sackings.
Oh, nice.
So between the point of it actually going to press and us seeing it, it was just like Stan and I just texted each other like, oh, for God's sake, like, who's next? Who's it going to be next? Like, so yeah, it was pretty funny. We got there in the end. It looked great, I think, in the end. I think there's a certain point where you've got to, like, obviously for us, you've got to draw a line and just go, yeah, like, it's done. People realise, you know, print media, it is what it is. It's correct at time of going to press, in brackets.
Yeah.
There's a piece of art on that. It was lush, though. But I love working with Stan. He's aside from being an absolute gem of a lad, he's a super talented fella as well.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. And looking to your own connection to football, can you look back over early memories and your earliest kind of visual memories to do with football and think, oh, you know what, that all set a seed to what you do now? You know, being an art editor of 442, that's... there's a lot of people around the world that would love to do what you do every day. And can you look back over early memories of football and think, yeah, you know what? That must have left an impression.
Yeah, I think so. It was weird. I was talking to somebody recently about this. And I was kind of saying, you know, where's it come from? Because I've got a bit of a fascination with magazines and stuff as well. And I used to go and get the big shop on a Wednesday with my mum.
Right.
And she'd just kind of plonk me at the magazine counter and I'd sit there and read, like, and I remember reading, like, Read and Destroy, like a skateboard magazine and all that sort of stuff. So I'd just sit there for like half an hour while she went and got the shopping. So I kind of think my fascination with magazines kind of always, I think that's probably where it started, truth be told. But in terms of the football, I just kind of, that's the age-old cliche, you know, like, you don't get a choice up in Newcastle. It's like, it's what you do, you know, like, I'm born and raised in Wallsend. You know, I went to Wallsend Boys Club. I played for Wallsend Boys Club. You know, I played for, you know, Brazil teams like Michael Carrick and people like that played in. I know all the same people. His mum and dad, like, his wife's mum and dad live around the corner from my mum and dad. Like, it's, it's just kind of, so football's, that's just what you do. And obviously, my Saturday was, I remember the first time going with my dad. So we'd be shopping in the afternoon and he was like, oh, can I take the lad up to the... So we were shopping and it was like end of the afternoon. And he's like, right, come on, just left me, man. He's like, I'm just going to take him up to the ground. I remember he put me on his shoulders and he ran up Northumberland Street, round the Haymarket, up the back, up towards the ground.
Yeah.
And we stood outside the Leeses end with the gates shut, just waiting for the last 5 minutes when they opened the gates. So we could just sneak in. So he just wanted to show me. And I can remember the noise, but I remember the gate opening, going in, and it just being green, just being like, what is this? And just the noise of just being absolutely, unbelievable. Never forget it. So that was kind of my first baptism. We just saw the last 5 minutes of the game and then came back. But yeah, and then that was it. Like, you know, the seed was sown then. You just always going to be going to football. So I think when I saw the opportunity, I was obviously devouring football, you know, buying 442, playing football. It's just football, football, football. So I think, I don't know, when the stars aligned and it was like, all right. And I just bowled it. I mean, if I think, I look back and think, you know, had I not walked in that or taken that job or got that interview and worked on, you know, because I don't think I would have ever had the forethought to kind of pursue that and be like, all right, that's what I'm going to try and join the two up, you know, like football and graphic design. Or it was kind of quite lucky in that sense. But then once I did and I saw that they were there, then I was like, I was no looking back. I was always going to, I had to work on that magazine in some way, shape or form. You know what I mean? It was like, there's no way. That's my magazine. I want to work on that, you know, and having been working on it, worked with the people I've worked with, they're all exactly the same. All just football daft.
Yeah.
And just to have a real pride in the brand and 442 and kind of what it means, you know, like to people, I do feel privileged to work on it. I really do. Watch, I'll get sacked on my neck on the next issue.
There'll be a disclaimer at the start of this episode. Can you let people know about Wall's End Boys Club?
Yeah, I mean, God, aside from the, you know, there's a lot of great players come through the ranks there and like, you know, it being an institution. It was just kind of the focal point for everyone in the centre of Wall's End. Yeah. I mean, it used to be right bang in the centre of Wall's End, coming up Station Road. It's kind of funded by the ship Swan Hunters at the bottom of the road, I think, from its inception, but it's not there anymore. They've moved it. It's like kind of up by the sports centre now. But yeah, it's still just an amazing institution. Like, it was just a little five-a-side football pitch, just judo upstairs, table tennis, you know, like it's just a great place. There's leagues on every day. And, you know, various managers and teams you wanted to play for. So I played for a manager called Bob Sloan.
Yes.
Who had he kind of had, I would say, the best teams, but one of the team you wanted to be on was Brazil. So I had a couple of seasons playing for Brazil, which was good. And then I played for various other teams, all with ridiculous names. But yeah, it's just a great place, a great breeding ground for football. You know, you see who's come through there. You know, we played games against Gaza and Lee Clark and people like that when we were there. Alan Thompson.
Oh, wow.
Who went on Celtic, he went to my school, yeah. But he played there. You know, loads of people have gone through there. Like Steve Bruce, obviously, as well. Yeah, it's just a great place. I've got very fond memories playing there. But we just, that's where you went. That's what you did. You stay out of trouble. You'd go there, and even if you weren't playing, you'd go and watch everyone else. And then you'd play in all the leagues. So, you know, the higher leagues, any league you could get into, you could get a game, you'd play. It's a great place.
And how would you describe yourself as a footballer?
Oh, luxury player.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Nah, I mean, I don't know. I played when I was playing at school, I played on the wing. And then since we've been playing down here, I've always played up front. So, yeah, scoring goals and stuff. But as time goes on, I try and feel myself going further and further back.
Yeah.
But we had, weirdly, he has a good one for you, but we had, and I've gotten, this is even more ridiculous, it's under my bed as we speak upstairs. So as part of our game, we had a golden boot, like a real golden boot.
Oh, really?
Boot. It's actually Henrik Larsson's golden boot.
Wow.
And we interviewed him not that long ago when the lads did it at work, and I was like, you've got to ask him about this golden boot, because it was sitting on my desk for years, and we had the golden boot presentation anyway, and I won the golden boot for a couple of seasons. So it was just became, and then when we moved offices or whatever, it just got shoved in a drawer, and I was like, I swear, I'm keeping that. So I started keeping it. So it's literally sitting under my bed as we speak, and I think Chris, one of the lads, interviewed him not that long ago and asked him about it, and he's like, as far as I'm aware, he says it's in a museum over in Sweden somewhere, something like that. So it's obviously it's the real I am, but it's a duplicate, and it's got the everything on the front, the plaque, though, sitting under my bed. So yeah, it's bizarre, but yeah, I'm still retaining. I'm the retaining golden boot for two seasons on the bounce, and I will not be giving it up anytime soon.
So, if you could most compare yourself to a player we're familiar with, just so we can paint a picture in our head of you as a footballer, who would you give us?
Oh God, gotta be kidding me. I don't know. I mean, the obvious is Alan Shearer, isn't it? It's gotta be.
Oh really, yes.
It's all about the goals.
Yeah.
All about the goals. It's probably more like Mick Quinn at the minute, if I'm honest. It's COVID lockdown has put Pete on Monday night dad's game.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an operation, flatten the curve for my stomach is underway at the minute.
Yeah.
I don't know. We need our Monday night game to get back and play for a few weeks. It's killing us all. Nah. Do you play?
Football got back about a month ago in Glasgow. So the Monday, the only place I play at that hasn't well, I haven't played it again yet, is Glasgow Green everywhere. But I think that's just circumstance. I've not played there yet. Yeah. But everywhere else is well, fives and sevens are both back up playing again. And I'm happy to be back as well. Very happy to be back.
Yeah, I'm desperate to get back out. It's had, the lads have been playing the last couple of Mondays, but by hook or by crook, I've just not been able to make it. But yeah, it's, I don't know. We'll get out soon enough, I'm sure. What position do you play?
Goalkeeper. And actually, I'll tell a Newcastle fan, there's a young keeper at Newcastle. I think he's out on loan again this season. I should know before bringing him up. But Freddie Woodman. A really good young keeper. And I'm really looking forward to seeing if he goes on to be Newcastle's number one or what he goes on to do. Because he's really good. And I think he's back out on loan again from you.
Yeah, another Geordie lad that works on Match of the Day magazine, Ketchell. He's a keeper as well, but I think he rates him really highly as well. I've heard good things about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Our team on paper looks so good.
It really does, steady. Yeah.
Yeah. And it looked so organised in that first game, and then that second game, it was just like they were strangers. Anyway, we all have a bad day. It's only two games in. Come on.
That's true. Keep the faith. Or if you ever had faith in the first place.
Yeah, I've been keeping the faith for as long as I can.
Ant, can you let people know where they can find you online, please?
It's a good question, Marcus, because I can never remember the logins myself. I am on, I think I'm just on, well, let me just double check.
No problem.
Really
bad. I can tell you your URL is anthmore.com, so that's anthmore.com.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah, the website. Yeah, website is just anthmore.com.
Yeah.
And I'm on Twitter as just at anthmore, anthmore. And my Instagram is thatkidanth, I think. Been that long since I set them up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that kid Amp on Instagram. So yeah, feel free to go on there and have a good laugh at my ugly face. I do post a lot of stuff on there for the mag and stuff as well, for promo and bits and pieces.
Fantastic, brilliant. And if you were to say one thing that you're most looking forward to in the football world over the next year, what would that be? It can be Newcastle related, it can be related to the magazine, it can be anything to do in the football world.
God, well, I'll rather selfishly, I'm not going to go with the obvious answer of, you know, Mike Ashley selling Newcastle, which would be great. And, you know, without getting into the whole Saudi regime and whether we've dodged a bullet there or not, you know, there are other rich people out there, but we'll see. I think, you know, getting people back into grounds was kind of key.
Yes.
You know, today, hearing the news today about, you know, whatever possible, no return for at least another 6 months or so, the impact that's going to have on a lot of lower league clubs, you know, as well, it's quite frightening, really, when I think about it.
Yeah.
How they're going to manage and the landscape of football is going to be like after that. So, you know, I'd like to see people back in the grounds, really. But I mean, yeah. I mean, what's your take on all that? How do you feel about it all?
When it comes to crowds back in stadiums, as long as my default is as long as it is whatever we're doing is for the benefit of safety first, you know, as long as that can be, as long as that decision is always first, and as long as there's an understanding that the smaller clubs that could genuinely do with help are given help, and the clubs that don't need help and could maybe not sign another player for X amount and do what they can do to support themselves, there must be an easy balance in there somewhere.
Yeah, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? It does worry me. But yeah, we'll see.
But then at the same time, what is happening at the moment was always predicted in terms of some kind of a second wave. So you would have thought that behind the scenes, there has been preparation for what could happen if this was going to happen. So,
Don't start me on that slippery slope.
Okay, no.
Are they going on my rant about the way things have been handled? But yeah, you've got to hope that at some point, we'll get back into grounds. And if not, there's got to be some sort of support or something in place to help out lower league clubs and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
again, it's a big ask, really, but we'll see. And then I suppose the dream for me is, to get rid of Mike Ashley and win the Champions League and announce Messi.
Yes. Well, maybe it's all set up for the end of the season and new owners.
I mean, that's got to be, hasn't it, really? Although, funny, one of the lads I went to university with, another black and white, who's moved down to London as well, he lives out in Tunbridge Wells, I think, at the minute, and he's selling his house. And I was lying in bed the other night and I got a text off and he's like, he's kind of one of the lads I'll text out the blue when the takeover's going on, It's like, sent us a photo. He's like, I'm selling my house, right? He said, you'll never believe who came around. It's like the woman came around, she looked down the house, took photographs, and then she went to leave and she gave us a business card and she was called Amanda Staveley.
Really?
He was like, and I don't know whether that's a good sign or a bad sign. I say, well, I could go either way. She either won't buy it, sell your house, or it'll take a long while to. Yeah, funny. I don't know. We live in hope.
Absolutely, absolutely. Brilliant, Anth. It's been fantastic chatting today.
You too. I was going to say, you too. It's been nice to actually put a face to the name and say, how did you find stuff after, because we picked you up and put you in the mixer and stuff after seeing, I think it was your BVB stadium demonstration, I think.
Yeah.
Essentially
that contributed to the work for UEFA happening, and that was installed early this year, and there'll be more happening with that around the tournament next year, I believe. All of that kind of exposure feeds into anything that happens later on. You never know when someone can see a piece of your work and when something might then come from it. But no, thank you very much for that coverage you gave myself and others. It was specifically the Dortmund home stadium that was in the magazine.
Yeah, it was great. I don't know where I saw it. It just popped up somewhere. I was like, oh, we've got to have that in the mag. It's so cool. That's one of the great things about the job as well, is like you get the, champion people, or when you spot stuff that's coming through, you just say, oh, that's great. And it kind of, we realise that sometimes, where we haven't got as much budget as we would like, and I hate to do it, it's not like using the carrots, the eternal thing of, it's great coverage for you guys, you'll get some. But for us, I think there's a lot of photographers like that as well, there's guys we work with called Cyril Mason out of France, and I'd say Sham falls in that bracket as well, of kind of they do it for the love of the game, but they also do it because they know that it's a good, it's good exposure and good coverage, and it puts them in under people's noses, like Adidas, like Nike, like the FA, like, and so on and so forth. So it's a surprising amount of people you see, a surprising amount of people being picked up being featured in 442 as well, which is quite cool. Sometimes can be annoying. People pop up and be like, he was ours. But no, it's great. It's lush to see. I was so pleased to see your work on like the FA programmes as well. And
thank you very much.
So it's always nice to see people that you've championed or that you've worked with doing well. So it's great. It's a surprisingly small world as well when you think about the illustrators and photographers. It seems like a big pool, but it's not really. Kind of people that you work with and people with the talent, they're all kind of connected networks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the illustration world, I think, as well.
Yeah, I do find that. And on other chats that we've had for other shows, I end up speaking to someone about the work of someone that I was talking to yesterday, or just a couple of days, the day before. So, small world in every possible way.
And one of the big, we did the best illustrators piece or whatever. I think we'll put you in there. But that was one of those where there's just so much stuff. There was just so, I could fill issues upon issues with amazing artwork and content, and the turnaround so fast online. But that was one of those features that we did, and the uptake and the feedback from it was bananas. I think one of the initial tweets that went out was just short of 1 million impressions or something on Twitter and stuff like that. It was madness. So it was an impossible task sieving it all down, because there is some dross in there, but yeah, it's just amazing. It's just it's just nice. It's always like, I'm a big believer in that kind of, I love that. Oh, I wish I had thought of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that. It's like, that's the business. So there's a friend of mine who does all the covers for the New European.
Okay, yes.
Called Chris Parker. And he's another one. It's great. And I speak quite a lot actually online, but it's kind of I spend a lot of time just going, that's so good. Like, I wish I'd thought of that.
And it's always the cleanest execution and the smoothest and the most uncomplicated idea.
Oh, absolutely. It is. That's the mantra. You know, it's one of those things I joke about. And I keep saying, I get it tattooed on me. Idea is king.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how good it is on Photoshop. Doesn't matter how this, that, and the other. If the idea is not there, if the idea will always out, it'll always win. Yeah. So it's because we see so much stuff we see coming through, and like, especially on Instagram, things like that, you know, it's just beautifully done, you know, lovely, fantastic, Photoshopped to hell. But you're just like, it's just another player Photoshopped to hell. It's not. You haven't moved anything on. There's nothing new there. It's not. So that's kind of what we look for. It's like stuff that's just a bit different. So like, for example, your work was really eye-catching because it was really like, you know, flat color, really good use of flat color, but just quite minimal as well. But it was like, it's BBB. That's beautiful. You know, it's like really iconic and stuff. Things like that where you're like, it's just something that's got it. But idea all the time. The idea will always be the winner.
Good man, and a good end point for people to learn from. So go away, apply that to your work, and who knows, it could be you that's being art directed by Anthmore for the next cover of 442. You never know.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we're always open for any submissions and all the rest of it. You know, we do spend a lot of time trolling around, but pitch ideas left, right, and centre. You know, if it's a good idea, it'll get snapped up. You know, but if it's not from us, it'll be from somebody else.
Brilliant. Top man. That's great. Thank you very much, Sean. Thanks for your time.
No worries at all, mate. Like I say, nice to meet you and good luck with the goalkeeping.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you, Ray.
Bye, buddy.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.